you. I appreciate the invitation to speak here. We're right to go, right? You'll be happy to know, Mary, that while you were up here talking, you got another follower on Twitter. So always tweeting. Mary gave a really good overview of all of the different types of social networking that you can be a part of. She also talked about some of the potential challenges in terms of having two blogs and how do you keep up with it and it became too much. And that's really what this talk is about, is more about how do you try to integrate these things together so you can reach that broad audience that she mentioned without overwhelming all of your time and diverting attention away from maybe publications, site visits, and all those other things that you're supposed to be doing besides playing on the computer, as many seem to think it is. Okay, so I talk about it all being about integration, and really this was, we rebuilt our website at Penn State, the Center for Turfgrass Science, when I got there a couple years ago, and we did a pretty intensive job of trying to incorporate all of these other social networking things into our site. And that's not because we want to drive traffic away from our site, but we wanted to make sure that people that potentially might find us on YouTube or Twitter or wherever else could be driven back into our site, because ultimately whatever your main site is, that's what you're trying to promote and where the meat of your information is going to be. So really it was about, for us, pulling that information in, and we integrated that in by incorporating and developing all of these things, Twitter, different types of blogs, Facebook accounts, Flickr, where we post pictures and other alternative media, as well as YouTube and even LinkedIn, which is considered the professional networking site. Okay, the premise of this talk and where this whole idea came up from had to do with the start of a turf disease blog that we initiated about a year and a half ago now. And the idea of the blog was to pull together a recent update on turf diseases for golf course industry people, but make it doable in the sense that I don't have to post every single update. So what I did is I pulled in four other researchers from different geographic regions, and we have those regions representing what we call the Northeast, the Southeast, the Midwest, the West, and the other one we couldn't really come up with a name. It became South Central. And so this, for one, alleviated some of the stress of having to post all the time. And so now we have routine posts from all these different people, and it really has opened up the social networking for us. But you also see a lot of integration of other things, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. So from the Facebook standpoint, Facebook has become, it's one of those things I fought for a long time. I really was anti-Facebook, I'll never do Facebook, and I finally jumped on board with it. And then once you jump on board with it, you get trapped in it for 6 months in this environment of I can't get out of it. I love it so much, and I got away from it for a while, but I ultimately came back to it. And now we have several Facebook pages, and we maintain quite a few. I have the Turf Disease Facebook page. I'm a co-advisor of the Turf Club, and we have a Facebook fan page. And the whole Penn State Turfgrass program has a fan page, but I also run a two-year program at Penn State, and we have a fan page. And so it becomes, well, how do you really incorporate all this together and actually make it work? Well, the first thing is you have to understand what's in a Facebook fan page. It's a little different than a group, and it's basically public information, right? Anything you put out there is not a hidden entity. It can be seen by everybody. But it really, the main purpose is to encourage and to develop these relationships of back and forth interactions, which I think is one of the keys to social networking. There's all kinds of other things you can do, from event creations to promotional ads. One of the things, and I keep going back to ways to alleviate the stress on one person, one of the things that we've done on our various Facebook fan pages, we've created the ability for the administrators, which if it's a turf disease blog, it's anybody that's an official blog author is considered an admin. And so when they post, it comes through as a post from the official fan page, therefore alleviating me the stress to feel like I have to keep up with all of these. And we do that with all of our pages. The students have access to the Turf Club. The faculty have access to the Turf page that we have at Penn State. So we try to integrate and simplify things for me anyway. Okay, another thing that's nice about Facebook is you can use this as a way to cross-promote. One thing that we've done is we put all our faculty up there with links back to their web pages. So if somebody has information on, you know, they want to click on Mike Fidanza's information, well, they can find it on the Facebook page. And Facebook, I found, is used so much more than just about every other social media that you really have to have a lot of information there. But we also include links to our other social sites, Twitter, YouTube, Flickr, and our blogs. Okay, the third main component I see that's really important in the integration is Twitter. And this is one that's really misunderstood, I guess, to some extent, but I've been doing it for a while now. Here's our turf disease update page, and we try to be pretty light with it. We've got caricatures of all the people that are there as official bloggers. And you can see here we have around 396 followers when I took this snapshot. Twitter, the one thing you have to watch is they always change the formats of these social medias. So we developed our backgrounds to fit within the old style, and then they changed it, and now we're hiding Frank and Jim over here. Apologize, Frank. So anyway, these are the three major components that I see in terms of getting the message out. But there are a lot of other social media outlets that I don't even know about. And I try to keep up with it. Kelly's sitting back there. We're both semi-insomniacs. And so we sit up at night at 3 in the morning pinging each other with emails going, what are you doing now at 3:30 in the morning? But you try to learn them, but it's very hard to keep up with them. But in any case, you want to try and integrate as much as possible. And that's, to me, what the key is. So there are several things that you can do to assist in the integration of all of these things so they hit together. One of them is RSS feeds. Most of you probably know what RSS feeds. It's simply a way that's internal to the website that you can take a link and you can be fed the information. And so if you click on this area and say you want to see the posts, it'll bring up a page and it'll say, well, how do you want to follow that post? Do you want to follow it in your email box or do you want it to be in Google? This is a great way to not have to have people remember to go back to your blog. They can subscribe to it, and once a week or once every 2 weeks or once a day, whenever you post, it goes to whatever site they're following you on. So this was an important thing, and it'll be important in a little bit when I talk about it. But in our discussions with golf course superintendents in particular, we started to find out that not everybody is into social media. Not everybody is quite as up to date. And there are even people that don't even have email. I was amazed at this. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. You don't have email yet? But there are the traditionalists that go between social media and email. Well, if you want to focus on social media, it doesn't mean you have to abandon the email as a way to get that message across. And so certain things like FeedBurner, which allow you to feed your blogs or your posts or your information into an email stream, can be a great way to have people sign up for the media in the format that they want. There are also lots of other desktop applications that are out there that can help to manage these accounts. Some of the things that I use, some of them, and some I don't use. And even yesterday, I talked to Sarah with Crop Science. I don't know if Sarah's in here, but she mentioned another one that I thought was fascinating, and I had used it, but they've upgraded it since. But anyway, you can use something like CodeTweet. Now, CodeTweet is something specifically designed for Twitter, but what it allows you to do is it allows you to have multiple people managing accounts. So you can actually, without giving away the password for one account, you can have multiple people manage one account, or you can manage multiple accounts. So I think that's one area that's pretty good. Another one is Twitter Deck. What's nice about this is you can use it as a way to develop keyword searches so you can come up with information that maybe you hadn't come across, and it can drive your ideas for new blog posts or for information that you want to send out to your followers, whether it be on Facebook or Twitter or a blog. So that's one thing that's beneficial. And then the other one that I find that's probably the most beneficial is Twitter Feed. And many of you may use this, but Twitter Feed uses those RSS feeds, and you can manage as many as you want. If you want to follow, for us, Golf Course Superintendents Association has a feed on Twitter. If we want to take that feed and then refeed it into our posts, so we can get that information out to our clientele, we can simply do that by logging into Twitter Feed, putting in that RSS feed, telling it where to go, and in a matter of minutes, it'll show up. Okay? We also use this for Facebook, and so we do not post our blog posts. We don't copy and paste them into our Facebook page. When we post a blog update, it automatically, through our Twitter feed, you can see circled here, feeds into our Facebook page. Okay, so it's a way to integrate without having to double up in the efforts. All right, so then the question comes up, well, how much information do I put out onto these sites, and what's the general rule of thumb? Well, I don't think there is a general rule of thumb, but in our instances, in most cases, it's kind of a backward flow. Twitter for us is where we put the most posts. Twitter is like a hodgepodge of everything you can imagine. It's very short characters, and you have to just rapidly put information. We repost information because Twitter is a real live, a real-time stream, and if somebody's not on there looking at that as it goes by, they might miss it. So you might post something once or twice or maybe three times, and that's perfectly acceptable on Twitter. But you wouldn't want to do that on a Facebook account. On Facebook, you limit it to maybe a little bit less information, and then you get down to YouTube and Blogger, and those items that take a lot of time and effort to produce. A blog may take you a half hour, or if you're really into it, maybe an hour to develop. YouTube videos, we heard that, you know, $4,000 or $5,000, and you produce 15 videos. It is a time-concerted effort. So we end up having less of those, but they tend to have, I think, more impact in terms of the information. But this is kind of our workflow that we go through. Now, if you take whatever your workflow is that you develop and work, I guess, backwards from it, this is what I have developed as a typical workflow for me. And generally what we do is develop content either via a blog post, and we may include pictures or we may include a YouTube video with that, but we develop a blog and we hit submit. So it goes live onto our blog. Well, once we do that, it automatically hits the rest of the places. And that's done by Twitter feed from Blogger to Facebook. Facebook has an automatic selective tweets that you can set up to go from Facebook to Twitter. And then depending on whether we want it to go to LinkedIn, we will use the LinkedIn selective Twitter feed to send it to LinkedIn. And so this is the setup that we have to make that distribution, so we don't have to post in all these places. But there's other times, as I mentioned, you do not want to go straight to the blog. Maybe you're posting something that's just a photo of some students out in a classroom, and it's not really appropriate for a blog, but it may be appropriate for Facebook. Maybe it's a news story. And so we use a direct link into Facebook and then have that hit those other sites. So if you kind of see the integration of it, it tends to take away some of the overwhelming nature of, wow, I have to, you know, spend 2 hours posting to the blog, and then I've got to go put it onto Facebook, and then I have to copy and paste it to Twitter, and then maybe I want to put it to my LinkedIn group. It can tend to take away some of that kind of daunting task involved. And the nice thing about this is, regardless of what you want to put up, you can simply post that to whichever site, and it will stream down that line. Some of the other tips and tricks that we've learned now. I talked about earlier about the use of events, very good for promoting conferences that you have coming up or extension activities, field day events. What I find, though, is people start to put them in multiple places. So what we tried to do is create an area where we use the mainstream. In this case, we use Google Calendar. And anything we put on Google Calendar, it feeds into our Facebook and down to Twitter in that format. But if I change the event or if I make any modifications, I make it back into this original event and it updates it in all those locations. The problem if you don't do that, if you use the calendar events on Facebook and try to go backwards, it's not as easy. And so you can't update it in Facebook and expect it to hit on your web page where you're also pulling in your feeds from your calendar events. So this can be so problematic in terms of the cyclical nature of these posts, where you post something to Twitter, but then you forgot that you had a Twitter automatic feed back to your Facebook account, but your Facebook account has an automatic feed to Twitter, and it could just go like this in a circle. So you really have to develop this workflow from the beginning and have an idea of what's going to work best for you. So we've got our Google Calendar events, we've got YouTube videos, Flickr. I'm a big fan of Flickr and getting pictures out. I think that by using and utilizing all of these different media, you can attract people that may have no idea what turfgrass science is or what agriculture topics are going on right now. But they may find a picture that's useful on the Flickr account because they looked up sunsets, and that happened to be a tag that you had, and they found your picture and then found it interesting and then started a dialogue or somehow found your site. So it's a way to pull people in to bring more people into your information. Okay, and then the idea of this is limitless. You can basically do anything you want. Whatever you can think of, you can feed into these systems. It's just a matter, again, of developing the proper workflow. And so if you look down here, we use links, which means we basically just pull the link in. We use an automatic Twitter feed service. We use the selective tweets, which is just facebook.com, I think, /Twitter. And it comes up with, if you have a page, do you want to send it to your Twitter account? We use LinkedIn. We use this ICS to events. We use Facebook to Flickr or Flickr to Facebook. So we use all of these applications, which there's new ones developed all the time to help integrate. All right, so how did this impact in terms of where our numbers were coming from with the sites? Well, not all media are liked, and I use liked because Facebook seems to be the one that we are liked the most on, and that's their key word. But if you start looking at this, this was data that I collected last Saturday as I was sitting in my office and everybody was out at the tailgate. Trying to put the last minute touches on it. But you can see, we don't have a lot of YouTube videos. This is on our Turf Disease page, but we have 10 subscribers to our YouTube page. And so we might get some people in there. Now, that's not our views on the page, but that's our subscribers. That means that people actually are coming there for a reason. They just didn't randomly hit on it. On our blog, our Turf Disease blog, we've got 105 followers. Now, this was the driving force behind me trying to integrate the media. I was so frustrated knowing that we were getting hits to our blog that we weren't seeing it in terms of numbers of followers. Well, what I've realized is most people don't even use Blogger to follow, so it's not a real good indication of how many people are following you. All right, but we also have it set up through email, so you can sign up through Feedburner to get our email of our blog, and we have 289 subscribers to that. So now we're getting up into more substantial numbers where I felt a little more comfortable that we were actually making some headway here. And then our Twitter account, we have 396 as of last Saturday. I see that JP Loves Cotton's in the back room, so she makes a shout out to her here. So we're getting up in terms of the numbers, but it wasn't until we really integrated heavily into Facebook that our numbers skyrocketed. And it was in a matter of a month that we had 500 followers, and now we're up to over 1,200. And so numbers don't necessarily equate to impact, but at least it's an indication that people are coming and reviewing your information. There's all kinds of other ways to figure out how you're reaching people. There's tweet reach. So for Turf Diseases, our last 50 tweets reached almost 1,700 people. What they did with it, who knows, but we know that we're reaching them. But I think we're gonna hear about it on the next one, at least with Google Analytics, which I'll show in a minute. The nice part about some of these functions is that you can get demographic information, you can find out the type of people. In this case, because we're a heavily male-dominated industry, you know, our predominant followers on Facebook are 87% male and between the ages of 25 and 34. So that helps us to understand the demographics of the people that we're going after, which could be very beneficial from an educational standpoint for our turf program at Penn State. And then the real impact for me is Google Analytics. This is where we can see all that traffic we were trying to drive back to our Turf Disease webpage. This is where we can see the result of that, because ultimately they have to get back to that page to read the blog. And so we had a big spike during the summer when things got rough, and we peaked out at about 600 visits per day, and visits per day, and almost 100,000 page views this year, just over 90,000. So we had, a big impact, and we're reaching people in 124 different countries. So I know that the integration is part of the effectiveness of this, and being able to do it in a way that isn't going to tax your time is important. So I think we're good on time with that. So with that, I would say that overall, integration is not that difficult. It does take some work to figure out your workflow, but if you integrate it properly from the beginning, it's going to make it a lot easier for you to maintain and focus on the content and not worry about all the different areas you have to send it to. So with that, if I can maintain all of these sites, you too can do it, trust me. All right, thank you.